Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome along to Football Digest with myself, Ned Keating. This week I'm joined by John Cross, no Andy Dunn, unfortunately, so you'll have to make do with the pair of us instead this week. But John, we've got plenty to go at. The Champions League, much like this week on this show, it's going to come a little bit later on in the show as well. Obviously, both English clubs in action on Tuesday night, and we'll talk about them a little bit later on in the show. But for now, we are going to open up with the Premier League, and all eyes on Sunday were on Old Trafford. Manchester United 2, Liverpool 2. I don't know if you can call it a game of two halves, I suppose, but definitely Liverpool should have been further ahead than 1-0 at half-time. And in the end, that came back to bite the limit, John. Two Man United goals putting them in the lead. Liverpool having to rely on the late Mohamed Salah penalty to get something out of the game. After the match, Jurgen Klopp was asked whether or not he sees it as points dropped. The fact that Liverpool are now down to second in the table, third favourites for the title. We'll come on to what it might mean for the title race in a second, but third favourites, at least after the game anyway, for the title. For now, but it was points dropped, John, wasn't it? The manner in which Liverpool played in that first half, you know, if you offered them a draw at Old Trafford, given what had happened in the FA Cup before the match, they probably would have bit your hand off. But given how they played in that first half, it really is a case of points dropped for Liverpool in the title race, isn't it?
Absolutely. I just thought the craziest stat, and there are stats to blow your mind out of every game, I think, the craziest stat that I saw out of yesterday was that Liverpool had more shots at Old Trafford than they did when they beat Manchester United 7-0 last March. And it was just, you know, that for me is amazing, really. 28 shots and then to produce only two goals really is just astonishing. They played so well in that first half. They could have won two games, possibly three, with the amount of chances created just in that first half. United were an absolute mess, a complete shambles. It felt so strange, felt so so un-Man United, Liverpool, to be honest. And the madcap mayhem of the FA Cup tie 3 weeks earlier almost, you know, sort of replicated, I think, because the game was all over the place, really. But it did feel like a very, very big day for Liverpool and for the other title challenges because, you know, I do think that whoever wins it out of the three, out of Liverpool, Arsenal or Man City, has got to be nigh on perfect, really. And I do feel that these days, the cruel fact is that Man United is a game that you have to go and win at Old Trafford. Back in the day, that would be a kind of one of those games where you think, wow, that could trip you up. It's not like that anymore, which is a pretty damning indictment on United. And I just thought Liverpool were very good in some ways, but their finishing was wayward. It was a bit like that in the FA Cup tie. They could have easily won it so comfortably in that second half, and yet they wasted chances. And a bit like this again, suppose they had chances even, you know, before they scored, you know, three really good chances first half. You know, Nunes was denied, Salah missed one, Salah missed another in the second. Oh, it was so frustrating for Liverpool. But did feel at the end of it that they were very frustrated because they didn't take all 3 points from a game they dominated. And yet Man United, it was interesting really, because you take a sort of a straw poll of United fans. Yes, they enjoyed the moment, putting, you know, spiking Liverpool's title guns, if you like. But there was a degree of frustration there as well, simply because if you go 84 minutes in and you're 2-1 up at home, you've got to try and see that out. And you really don't want to see a rash tackle from your fullback, who's regarded as one of the Premier League's best one-on-one defenders. He certainly wasn't in that scenario. I'm sorry, it's a penalty all day long. Not having the debate around it, of course it is. The momentum carries him through, even if he doesn't initially make contact. And sorry, but it's a penalty. And, you know, United probably mixed feelings because they threw it away. They, you know, imagine the jubilation and the joy that they would have gotten. But at the end of the day, they ended up being a little bit frustrated. The only thing they got out of the day was that basically, you know, sort of derailed Liverpool's title charge a little bit themselves, which isn't completely what they wanted. Yes, they'll have enjoyed it, but it was still a case of, I think, what if, even for them.
Yeah, we'll come on to Man United a little bit more in a moment and what it means for them and the fact that now it is, you know, three games in succession since the Italian international break that they've, you know, come chucked winning positions away very, very late, obviously a little bit earlier this time around compared to Chelsea and Brentford in their previous matches. But for Liverpool, and you mentioned it there about, you know, strikers and missing chances, and you know, for Mohamed Salah, he's someone that we've kind of come to expect to bulge the back of the net. He seems to still got, you know, a lovely tally for the season. Still third, I think, in the Premier League top scorers. But he's not maybe as prolific as we've seen in previous campaigns in terms of you know, conversion chances. Saw a comment from our colleague yesterday, Ryan Taylor, you know, commenting that maybe Liverpool are missing Diogo Jota. In terms of the injuries that Liverpool have, you kind of look at, you know, Alisson still to come back, Trent still on the sidelines. But you do kind of wonder whether or not Ryan's point is, you know, fairly good here, that Diogo Jota, he's so clinical in front of goal that whenever he gets a chance, he almost seems to bury it. Is that maybe the one player that Liverpool are going to miss the most in this running? That when, you know, chances are, there are going to be tight games where they need to take their chances. They can't be as wasteful. You know, yesterday, I'm saying this as if, like, yesterday they got away with it and they were fine, but they still dropped points, didn't they? There are going to be more instances where this happens, where they need to take these chances that come along. They can't be as wasteful as they were against Man United again. And a player like Diogo Jota, and how clinical he has proven himself to be for Liverpool, it kind of feels like he might be the biggest miss for them in this run-in.
Yeah, it's a great talking point, because I do think that Jota has just become, you know, Liverpool's Mr. Clinical. And he is very versatile as well, isn't he? You know, so he basically could play, you know, as an attack-minded midfielder in the three, or definitely alongside, you know, in the front three. So you've got that option, particularly, I think, when you make changes to win a game. And so when you're chasing a game, you're inevitably looking for someone to be clinical in the closing stages. And I think Jota, you know, was that man. So basically, he would really be clinical from sort of almost open play normality, 90 minutes. But actually, when they were chasing the game, how many times would he come up trumps? You know, he really felt as if he really had a killer instinct. And let's be honest, Liverpool did well to spot that in the first instance, really, because I think when people, you know, saw that they signed him, thinking, really? Didn't sort of see that one. Well, he's been absolutely, you know, fantastic for Liverpool and fully justified, you know, that deal, and he's a good player. I just feel all over the place, though, Ned, that's the issue for me. I think Kelleher has been great, but then, you know, do you get 5% more out of Alisson? You know, again, at sort of at fullback, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, it offers so much from right back. I'm not saying Bradley hasn't been brilliant. He has been. But it's those little marginal gains, you know, Curtis Jones, a substitute yesterday. But then basically, how much have they missed him? I think, in my view, huge amount, because he's just been great. I think Alexis McAllister is, in my view, when we talk about kind of lots of people talk about the, you know, player of the year, and, you know, the FWA voting is open for Football of the Year, shameless plug. And basically everyone's talking about our kind of Rice or Odegaard for Arsenal. They talk about, you know, if it's Man City, Rodri or Foden. And Liverpool, they talk about Salah and Van Dijk. Well, I actually think that McAllister should be in this conversation now. I'm not saying that he necessarily wins, but my word, as the season has gone on, he's been absolutely phenomenal. I thought he was great at Old Trafford again yesterday. But then, you know, he also needs someone to feed off, you know, so the strikers have then got to take those chances. And Diaz, I think, has been marauding and brilliant. But is he a clinical finisher? No, he's not. I think Nunes, I just love Nunes. You know, people have been so disrespectful to Nunes for so long. But again, you know, his qualities are his all-round game rather than be that absolute clinical finisher. And Salah, you know, just, I don't know, filled me with confidence when he stepped up from that penalty spot to score. His record is a bit patchy at times on penalties, but he's clinical. But it's just that marginal, tiny elements that I think that Liverpool miss. And to have actually battled through this run and period of time with so many injuries and to get through it is a phenomenal achievement. I still think that Liverpool, you know, might be slightly ahead of Arsenal simply because of the run. I think Arsenal have got a hard, really hard run in of games. And I also think that sort of kind of City remain my sort of kind of choice a little bit. But I do feel as if Liverpool, to have come through for so long, to miss so many players, phenomenal achievement still to be in the mix. But I do think all three, we talk about needing to be perfect, all three, I reckon, will drop points. And so that's the key. And it's just basically making sure then it's not too hurtful. So Liverpool's still in the mix and still joint top, which, you know, at the end of the weekend isn't that bad a result after all, I think. But I'm sure Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool fans probably won't agree.
Just to come away from the title race slightly, and I'm going to push you. I think, you know, you hinted at it there, and I think I agree with you that Man City still remain the favourites, but we will get your kind of thoughts just on the title race in general just a little bit later on. But just quickly on Man United, Kobbie Mainoo, brilliant goal, fantastic goal. We do have to talk about him again, and I know it kind of seems like we're talking about him every week, but... You know, if anyone listening back to one of our brilliant exclusives last week can hear it, you have a great discussion with your colleague in the press pack, Jess Shreves, about whether or not Kobbie Mainoo should be playing for England at the Euros. And it's a great... So for anyone that hasn't heard it yet, please do go back and listen to it. It's last Thursday's episode of the podcast, so do go and give it a listen. But it seems just kind of... Every week, it just seems that Kobbie Mainoo is proving more and more why he should be probably starting for England in the Euros, what he can offer as well. And, you know, fantastic goal for a kid. You know, a young boyhood Man United fan. It's what dreams are made of. But it was just such a fantastic goal, the way he took it, how he set it out. You know, I saw people say shades of Makeda. But I think Makeda was a little bit closer in when he had his moment. But it was very similar how far he set it out. And it was a perfect strike. And this kid is just continuing to show that he is playing, you know, years above his age, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. Just before kickoff, I sort of, you know, as journalists often do, sort of glance from the press box across to the director's box just to sort of see who might be in the house. You know, a lot of focus on Jim Ratcliffe and Dallas Brailsford. But, you know, with my eye and my interest, basically, I did see Steve Holland there. And basically, you know, and I mean, he's clearly come to look at, you know, Mainoo, I think, basically, because... I mean, they're probably worried about Rashford. I mean, his form at the moment is poor, so poor, so disappointing again yesterday. And, you know, I just don't know quite where Rashford is at the moment. You know, it's really worrying for such a key player. But Mainoo is just brilliant. Worried me, though, Ned, overall, because I thought he got caught in possession a lot. And this sounds really ultra-cautious, but basically with when you're bringing in an 18-year-old into the team, I just think you need to manage it. And basically, you know, drop him in for a run of games, take him out for a rest. It's a hell of a stress. He doesn't look stressed or fazed by it at all. You know, it's sort of worry lines, if you like. Sort of. But I think this is the kid who's been carrying Manchester United on his shoulders for weeks, absolutely weeks, which says everything you need to know about the state of Manchester United. He's been absolutely phenomenal. But I tell you what, when you carry that weight of expectation on your shoulders for as long as he has, I think it's bound to weigh you down. And I do think that there has to be a conversation at the moment to say, as good he is, as important as he is, he needs a bit of a breather. Because honestly, get back to getting the very best out of him. You know, I got in from Manchester and watched Match of the Day, and they're highlighting his brilliance and so on. And absolutely, all of that is valid. But I think across the piece of the whole 90 minutes, I don't think that was one of his best games. I think his game was lit up by that goal. That goal was phenomenal. And it's a bit like what happened at Wolves, actually, if you remember that, when basically he took the game by the scruff of the neck, scores the last minute, you know, sort of last gasp winner in that game. He's got that magic and brilliance about him. That is exactly why I should go to the Euros. That is exactly why I should be making a case, you know, to start for England this summer. But it's got to be a conversation whereby... You know, the kid needs a bit of a breather, and basically, you know, to make sure that he carries on producing such brilliance like that, I do think he needs a bit of a breather. Brilliant goal. Fabulous. He engineers it. He drives it forward in the first place. It's him driving through from midfield towards the box. It's him then exchanging passes. It's him then getting the goal back. That's initiative from such a young player. You know, I just thought he was fabulous. And even in a, you know, from a player who's looking a little bit tired and a little bit jaded. No wonder he's had so many games, but basically still producing magic. And I think that says everything about his overall ability. But for his long-term health and you know, and basically and performances, I do think United need to have a think about getting the best out of him, managing him, and make sure they don't overplay him.
not sure if Erik ten Hag will heed those warnings, though, in his comments. And again, we could have probably done an entire podcast on it, but I don't feel we've got enough time to go through it because we've still got a Champions League to talk about. But his comments afterwards, you know, when asked about Manu and Willy Cambuala as well coming in, saying that Man United's future looked extremely bright. And, you know, I know those comments or some similar comments to other bits of the press riled Roy Keane, you know, seeming almost positive of that beat after a 2-2 draw, which they were probably quite fortunate against Liverpool to still be in the game, as we said, at half time. And interesting for Erik ten Hag. I mean, you know, they do have some good youngsters, but it just feels a bit weird to almost be kind of so positive after a game, as we say, and that we're so unfortunate to still be in it after half time. But enough about Man United. They're not in the title race. Manchester City are, Arsenal are, Liverpool still are. As we say, they're Arsenal now top of the league after their victory over Brighton at the weekend. Liverpool are into second after dropping points at Man United, and Man City round out the top three. But bizarrely, you know, such is it, such is life, that the team in third are currently the favourites to win it. John, how do you see it going? You hinted at it earlier that it is going to be Manchester City, I think, is what your answer is going to be. For me, it is as well. You know, there kind of seems to be this, you know, inevitability almost, you know, kind of there. You can do everything, you can run around, you can score as many goals as you want, and then it will all come up and Manchester City will be the answer. They just seem, especially in this stage of the season, that it just seems that there's kind of something that just clicks second half of the campaign, and it is just win, 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 win. They are a machine, I think. You know, kind of almost like the silverware. The closer they get to the end of the season, the stronger the smell gets, the more they kind of drag themselves towards it. And for me, I think that it is, you know, inevitable that Manchester City will be lifting the Premier League trophy again. Maybe a bit strong there saying inevitable, but for me, I think they still remain the favourites and the ones to beat in this title race. But how do you see it going, John?
Yeah, I think that City, I've looked at, pored over the run-ins of all three. Liverpool have got a crazy week coming up whereby it could, you know, really decide their fate. And I think that, I still think Liverpool are, you know, potentially City's almost closest challengers. And, but they need to navigate a hell of a week. I think there's something about it that Thursday to Sunday, and the Europa League fixtures, they sort of kind of back into it from this week, you know, this week against Atalanta. Why does Thursday, Sunday matter? Well, I guess it's only the equivalent of Champions League Wednesday to Saturday. But the difference with the Champions League is that sometimes, like Arsenal this week, you get Tuesday to Sunday and then basically, I guess, Sunday to Wednesday. But, you know, it's swings and roundabouts, right? But you don't get swings and roundabouts with Europa League. That's the point, you know. So it gets intense and, you know, that fixture conundrum throws them up kind of going to Italy for the return leg on the Thursday, then at Fulham on the Sunday, and then they've got the Merseyside derby on the Wednesday night, followed by a trip to London for the Saturday lunchtime kickoff. And I'm surprised Jurgen Klopp hasn't kicked off, by the way, for West Ham on, you know, on that Saturday. I just think, if they come through that and win all those games, I think Liverpool will be champions, because what a test that is. That's phenomenal. But I do feel as if City have an edge over the rest in that they have a slightly easier schedule. Yes, they've got Brighton away and Tottenham away, which strike me as their standout fixtures, if you like. But I do feel as if they've got the winning know-how. They've got the drive of making it a historic fourth in a row, unprecedented. And therefore, I do feel as if, you know, they've got that little bit of motivation that Guardiola, I think, is driving into the players. They rested loads at Palace on Saturday and yet still came up trumps with a performance. We had some mistakes in it, don't get me wrong, but they got the job done and they've managed players and they've managed fitness and they've managed, you know, rotation. And I just feel as if, you know, they might have the edge. I think Arsenal at the moment are arguably playing the best football and the best, producing the best performances out of the three. That performance and win at Brighton was an Arteta masterclass. Absolutely phenomenal performance. Arteta's buzzword is control, and they controlled that game so well. They were, you know, never really looked in danger other than one outstanding Raya save, but, you know, it was a long shot anyway. And then basically, you know, Brighton just didn't get within distance to sort of land a blow almost. And that's a tribute to Arteta and Arsenal, simply because Brighton have been really good at home. So you know, they're attacking well, they're playing well, there's great understanding, they don't concede goals, they don't even concede chances, let alone shots, let alone goals. I mean, it's phenomenal what they're doing, you know, and I think that the progress that Arsenal are making under Arteta means that, you know, he's potentially building a legacy and a dynasty of success for as long as he chooses to stay, you know, he really do. But I just think that at the moment, you know, what is Arsenal's priority? Is it the Premier League or is it the Champions League? What a luxurious position to be in. But I do feel those three are so, so tight. There'll be nothing to choose between them. But I do still feel that Arsenal got arguably the hardest run, which includes Tottenham away and Man United away. And, you know, having said earlier, you should win at Man United, I still think it's, you know, a game that potentially United can still whip themselves up for. And if they can be, you know, kind of king, maybe they'll favour Arsenal. I don't know. Clearly Jurgen Klopp thinks so. But basically, I do feel as if, you know, it will come down to the odd mistake, the odd drop point here or there or everywhere. And I think it's, you know, it's more of about, I think City just know what it takes. And I think that's why I personally make them just slight favourites ahead of the rest.
Providing me with a lovely segue there, we are going to keep the theme with Manchester City. And of course, as we said earlier, the Champions League is back this week. The quarterfinals, both English teams unusually in action on the same night. Suggestions perhaps that when UEFA came to sort in the TV schedule, it may have been that they were trying to keep Real Madrid and Barcelona apart rather than the two English teams apart. So, you know, such is the draw of those, but who knows really what goes on when it comes to deciding the fixtures. But what we have instead is we've got both English teams in action on the same night, which means that we probably have to split our priorities and maybe have to watch it on dual screens for us that are watching it at home. And like yourself, John, who will be in the press box at Arsenal versus Bayern, which we'll talk about in a second. But for now, Real Madrid, Manchester City, last year's semi-final, a tie that really feels like it could have graced the final this year, such as the form of both teams and, you know, especially Real Madrid and that, and how Jude Bellingham settled in there as well. But that's the thing, isn't it? Jude Bellingham seems to have improved massively, this Real Madrid side, compared to the one that Manchester City beat quite comfortably in the semi-finals last year. And that's what they have to be wary of. This isn't the same Real Madrid team that they came up against last year. The manager might be the same, but they seem to have kind of progressed a different style of play. Vinicius and Rodrigo being those two attackers. No Karim Benzema this time for them as well to kind of spearhead that attack as well as it had done for years and years and years. This is a very different Real Madrid side and a very different test for Manchester City this time around compared to last year, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I feel it's a much tougher test. I think they are a team in transition, which I think is an amazing thing to say about Real Madrid, but only in transition in terms of they're a fantastic team going to an unbelievable out-of-this-world team. You know, because I think if they sign Mbappe, if they, you know, I mean, Hendrick was the star of the show at Wembley, got him coming further down the line. And I just think, wow, they've got an amazing future to draw on. If there was one area, you know, you'd have to sort of say, you know, previously it might be midfield, but I think there's sort of obviously Bellingham sort of not only strengthens that from an attacking sense, but also gives them a more, you know, more personality in midfield as well, from sort of slightly deeper as well. So I think they're a much stronger team, and they're a team that's building, progressing, winning. They also have that incredible know-how and ability to get the job done in the Champions League. And I think this will be such a test for Manchester City. I think it will be. I mean, I actually think that I've seen City so many times under Guardiola, but I do feel as if that performance when they blew Real Madrid away at the Etihad was arguably the best ever, you know. That was a phenomenal performance when they absolutely just, Real Madrid couldn't get near to them. And we all said, oh, Real Madrid, this team isn't very good. But actually, the reality was that City were just raising the level. Are they as good as they were, City? That's the question for me. No, I don't think they are. I think in the Premier League, I don't think they're quite as good as they were last season, but I still think they're largely better than the rest. But I still think that in European terms, I think, you know, what drives Guardiola on this time will be that desire to really sort of, you know, retain the Champions League, and sort of kind of that's what kind of gains you respect, isn't it? Kind of in European superpower terms. So there's no doubt about it. They'll have a real sort of kind of desire and determination to get there. I do make them slight favourites to beat Real Madrid, having said all that about Real Madrid and how they've progressed. But I do feel they are, you know, if City can get all their key players on the pitch and be in good shape, then I do make them slight favourites. And, you know, don't forget Real Madrid have obviously had an easier schedule, easier build-up to this. So, you know, there's certainly arguments either way, but I think this is such a fabulous quarterfinal. I think you're absolutely spot on. I think it was the scheduling that sort of obviously dictated to UEFA that basically Arsenal and City play on the same night, because basically it keeps Real Madrid and Barcelona apart. No one will ever say that, because also kind of what does it say about the Premier League, by the way? But, you know, we always think it's the best league in the world. Well, the reality is that kind of the viewers want to watch Real Madrid and Barcelona. So that's kind of quite instructive in itself. But there's no doubt about it. Arsenal and City have the hardest part of the draw, the hardest half, and it's really so tight. Both ties incredibly tight. I do fancy City just to see it out. I think Bellingham's such a great story. Well, I mean, he's just sensational, you know. And I love the fact that he will be looking at this, I'm quite sure, thinking, what an opportunity. You know, this is why I joined Real Madrid, you know, and basically will love the stage and love the moment. And I think they'll drive, you know, and push City so close. But I do think ultimately City will probably come out on top.
Yeah, it's going to be such a night for young English talent as well. Gareth Southgate, you know, there's me saying that I'll have to dual screen it. I'm sure Gareth Southgate will be in attendance somewhere watching the game tomorrow night, but he might have to have another one on his phone as well, because, of course, in that Manchester City-Real Madrid tie, we'll have, you know, Phil Foden on show, we'll have Jude Bellingham on show, as you said there, for Real Madrid. But again, of course, you know, Arsenal being the other team in action and kind of flipping it more towards them now. Declan Rice will be playing, Bukayo Saka maybe, you know, obviously the kind of injuries recently as well, you know, you kind of hope that he would be playing. But we'll kind of, you know, we'll see on that one. But with Arsenal, you know, kind of it kind of feels like that both of these ties, it was inevitable that they probably would have come out of the draw when it was made. Real Madrid against Manchester City seems to happen every year. You know, even Pep Guardiola, doesn't matter who he's in charge of, every year in the Champions League, he just plays Real Madrid. Could be in charge of Real Madrid, but he never will be in charge of Real Madrid one day. But it feels like if he was, he probably still would draw them, such is the way that he kind of seems to be a magnet for them in a draw. For Arsenal, of course, you know, this is their first time back in the Champions League for a number of years, but they've always drawn Bayern Munich. They've always had to face Bayern Munich. Normally it was in the round of 16, wasn't it, before and Bayern would see to them and put Arsenal's hopes of Champions League glory out. This time, a little bit further down the line, into the quarterfinals, but it feels a very, very different way around this time, doesn't it? It would be a surprise, John, without trying to put a curse on Arsenal, but it would be a surprise if they went out to this Bayern Munich side, such as their form in the Bundesliga, such as the kind of turmoil that they seem to be in as well. Thomas Tuchel to leave at the end of the season. Xavi Alonso turning down the job already. You know, looking like they're going to turn their attentions perhaps maybe to Roberto Di Sherby to fill the role in the summer. But it feels like it doesn't feel like a typical, you know, Bayern Munich side that will pose a tough test. But that's what Arsenal have to be wary of, that there are still match winners very much throughout this Bayern Munich side. And even though all the focus, all the talk for the game will be about the fact that Arsenal will be, you know, favourites definitely for this tie, Arsenal have to be very, very wary, don't they, still of Bayern Munich. But yes, they're having a difficult season and a tough time, but they are still littered with world-class players. Harry Kane, no less, leading the line for them as well.
Absolutely. Harry Kane, 38 goals, I think, 32 in the Bundesliga after scoring at the weekend. A weekend in which they threw away a two-goal lead at half-time and ended up losing 3-2. And then all manner of fallout after that, really, because against mid-table opposition, you just do not expect it from Bayern Munich. They are in a mess. And, you know, the amount of people that sort of say to me, oh, you know, I don't think they'll respond, or kind of, you know, Tuchel's lost the dressing room. I'm sorry, I just don't believe that any group of players with so many stars, with so much at stake, you get one career, one chance, and then basically I think that's self-motivation. There's no doubt about it for me that players like of the quality of Harry Kane, of, you know, of Sané, it's just all over the place. They've got quality, proven players. Thomas Müller talking about kind of, you know, they'll show fight against Arsenal. They'll respond against Arsenal. That's motivation enough, really. And I do feel that they'll be up for it, Bayern. Yes, they are in a mess. Their form has been really poor, so unpredictable. It feels like Tuchel. You know, as soon as you announce that a manager's leaving, I think that focus goes. You know, it has to, from the manager's point of view, from the dressing room point of view. But I just think on this one, yeah, they're in poor form. I don't agree that it would be a surprise if Arsenal went out, as much as you say that. I think it's more of a, you know, it would be a huge opportunity missed, a big disappointment, simply because I don't think you'll ever have a better chance, is how I frame it, of beating Bayern Munich. Because Arsenal's wretched record against champion, you know, against Bayern in the Champions League is unbelievable. You know, it seemed like they towards the end of Wenger's reign, they basically seemed to draw Bayern Munich every single time. You know, their last three results against Bayern Munich have been 5-1 to the Germans. I mean, it's astonishing. They've been so bad against them. You know, they have beaten them on the odd occasion, they've drawn them in the group, but they've never gone past them. Got past them in the knockout stages of the Champions League competition. I mean, it's abysmal, really. And yet, you know, this as you rightly say, Ned, I think this Bayern team have easily, comfortably got enough players and good quality players to kind of still pose a threat. And so what on earth is going wrong? It's difficult to fathom, I have to say. And I think for Arsenal, they're just in a good moment, basically. I do think they look nervous against Porto. They didn't manage either game well. I think they deserved it to go through over the course of it. It felt like a team that was kind of almost reintroducing themselves onto the European stage. So many of these players just haven't had much European experience in the Champions League. So I still think there's an element of that. I wonder how much, you know, Porto will have taught them. I think it will have taught them well, and I think they'll have progressed well. So I do think they'll come out the other side. I make Arsenal favourites in this, and I do think we'll see an all-English semi-final. But I do feel as if Arsenal will be pushed right to the limit by Bayern. I think it'll be a lot tougher than a lot of people are thinking right now.
That was going to be my next question to you about whether or not, you know, to tie in with Mirror Football's early big debate this week, which is whether or not we will see an all-English, how dare I suggest that we've got a British Premier League instead. But yes, all-English semi-final lineup. You're of the opinion that it will happen. I'll join you on that. But what I will do then is maybe end on this question instead, John, with Arsenal there, when you were talking about, you know, the nerves that they showed against Porto and kind of, yeah, this Arsenal side is more mentally resilient than we've seen before. You know, there was that, you know, that iconic, infamous quote from, you know, Patrice Evra going back a few years where he referred to Arsenal as, you know, being babies and the soft underbelly tag and everything towards it. That's not saying that you can label it this current Arsenal crop. However, you know, you kind of wondered last year in the Premier League title race, were they mentally ready? Were they mentally at that stage to kind of complete the job? Ultimately, they weren't. This year, they look to have progressed and they've come along and they kind of maybe seem mentally stronger again this year. And you kind of think they are in the right place, at least upstairs, that they can see it through and could be winners. You can, you know, you kind of have more confidence in that. But in the Champions League, again, there, as you say, you know, a lot of this team doesn't have the experience of big European nights in terms of playing for Arsenal, at least anyway. You know, Declan Rice won the Europa Conference League, but that's a big step up from that to winning the Champions League. So the question now is this team ready? Much like last season in the title race, it seemed that maybe it came a season too soon in their development. Is this team ready to go really, really deep? And we're talking semi-finals and potentially a final in the Champions League.
I do think it's a big step up. And I think that basically it's okay to be blasé and glib about it, but I don't think that understands the pressure and the intensity of the Champions League. I think that the reason why the Champions League is such a fantastic competition and such a test is that basically not only does it stretch you physically, but I think it stretches you mentally. I think players come away from any game absolutely exhausted because of the pressure that it really puts on the players' head and the sort of kind of the pressure and the expectation levels. I do think it raises your game, even against Porto. That provided a dip. You know, everyone said Porto, oh, easiest last 16 tie of all the clubs you could get. Well, they pushed them to penalties, you know, because basically Porto had seasoned campaigners who managed games And basically, Arsenal were struggling to find the puzzle. They weren't, you know, they had a slight dip. They were missing some players, Arsenal. But don't let that fool you, basically. I think the Champions League is the ultimate test and is a mental test as well. And that's why players talk about the kind of, you know, physical exertion after, you know, sort of a Wednesday night going into a Saturday, for example. And basically, it really pushes, I think, players to the limit. And it is a concern. I think, the one thing that potentially could trip up Arsenal. I think it's a sort of a period of adjustment. The other thing, how many players did, you know, Arsenal produce during the sort of kind of latter stages for international teams, you know, sort of because they were playing. And I think you see this right across the board, basically, the sort of international England players, you know, Gareth Southgate always wants to pick where possible players in the squad, where players are playing Champions League. You know, in an ideal world, he certainly can't at the moment, but, you know, there's a fair smattering of them that basically, you know, because I just think it pushes the players and you have to step up and you have to be ready for it. I think Arsenal, you know, even if they got through to and I know this sounds absolutely crazy, even if it was an all-English semi-final, I think it would have a different vibe and a different feel to it and a different pressure to it. That's the most important thing. And I do think, therefore, you know, that would be the ultimate test for Arsenal. But I do think they're, you know, they are ready to step up and beat Bayern. But I do think part of that reason is because they've come through that Porto test. They're graduating and they're improving. Took City how many years to win it under Guardiola? You know, so, I mean, you can argue all day long about, oh, they blew it in this game or they weren't ready in that game. But there's still, I think, even for those world-class players, there was an element of getting ready and adjusting. And I still think that, you know, it took the best team in Europe, you know, however many years to win the European Cup. Well, that tells you, I think, everything you need to know. But I do fancy Arsenal to get through it. And I do think Arsenal are progressing. Even if it's the semi-final this year, well, they'll take from that the semi-final this year. We're ready to go one step further next year. And that's the progression of a team.
No, absolutely. And of course, we wish both English teams the best of luck. And hopefully we do get a tasty all-English tie. Because again, then that guarantees that there will be an English team in the final at Wembley come June 1st. Just before we go, I just want to point out a couple of exclusives that we do have on Digest that you can listen back to. Of course, we mentioned one earlier. John sat down last week with Jeff Shreves to talk about his career and his new podcast. But got to talk about a few other things as well, including the title race and England takes Euro 2024. And over the weekend as well, we had a bonus episode of the podcast too. Virgil van Dijk sat down with Mark Jones. And again, you can listen back to that wherever you get your podcasts from. Of course, this week, you can keep up to date with all latest from the Champions League, the Premier League, and everything else football related across the Daily Mirror, Daily Star, and Daily Express websites. Don't forget to check back on Thursday as well for another episode of Football Digest Extra Time. And before I lose my breath completely, all that's left for me to say is goodbye.